There was something in the air today, or actually on the ground. You know what? Why not both? 16 different running backs scored more than 15 PPR points. 27 wide receivers eclipsed that total as well. And you know what? Also two kickers and three defenses. What a high scoring day for fantasy football. And what a high scoring day for the Chicago Bears as they actually scored 30 whole points today. And you know what? Joining us, interrupting his glorious 3-0 celebration party, is our own Mike Miglius. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm all aboard the Foles train. You know, I head to the Super Bowl station. Just going to pull off a little what the Eagles did. He's just going to win us the Super Bowl, be the MVP, and then we'll get rid of him and pretend like he never happened.
That would be quite the year for sure. I think at that point we could just rename it to the Super Foles MVP. If he did that twice in, what, 3-4 years, that would be crazy. And you know what else happened today? The Bengals played a football game of some sort. I think there was football being played on the field. And here with us to talk about literally anything else but that is Eric Smith. Eric, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah, the Bengals did not lose today, so I'm sure I will not be mocked on this podcast for 1 minute. Actually, both teams really looked like they wanted to win this one, so it came down to the wire. Joe Burrow gets his first tie of his professional career, and yeah, once again, welcome to the Bengals, Joe. This is how it goes.
Yeah, you were right about one thing. They didn't lose today. In fact, neither team did. And that, honestly, that kind of has to feel like a win for the Cincinnati Bengals and the Philadelphia Eagles. Hey, I hope you caught our live stream this morning. We do it every Sunday before the 1 o'clock games start. And you don't want to miss that as Aaron Rader and Matt Dean answer your last minute starter sit questions. So make sure to check that out next week and you know, all the weeks moving forward. And hey, also tomorrow, Monday morning, we're going to have our What We Saw article that'll go over every single game, including Sunday Night Football. You can find that on our website, QBList.com, and at our Twitter page at the QB List. Hey, I got a quick trivia question for you guys. Eric, I know you love these trivia questions. I do so very much. So, where did the Indianapolis Colts defense rank today among all fantasy players? Total fantasy points, where do you think they rank? That includes quarterbacks, everyone. Where do you think they rank today? Mike, I'm going to put you on the spot first. I'll give Eric a chance to think about it. Mike, where did they rank?
I'm going to go with, I know they were the top defense. Let's go eighth.
Eighth overall? Okay.
Eighth overall.
Yeah, I'm assuming this is high since you're asking it. I believe they had two touchdowns, so let's go sixth overall.
Okay, well, you guys are going a little bit. I mean, there are a lot of like great performances today. The Colts ranked 14th today among all fantasy players, which is still pretty incredible. Just, you know, I guess not as incredible enough for Eric and Mike over here. By the way, Steven Goskowski ranked 19th. So some really big days from even the defense and kickers, you know, today. And to talk about all those big players and all those big winners, let's start with Eric. Who's your big winner of the day?
Yeah, I mean, there's some obvious ones that I passed up on, like Tyler Lockett, just because we know he's great and Russell Wilson's great. So I'm going with Justin Jefferson here. He only had six targets through the first two games of the season. The Vikings have looked just terrible on offense. They really needed someone other than Dalvin Cook and Adam Thielen to step up. So Justin Jefferson had a huge game, nine targets, seven receptions, 175 yards and a touchdown. Sure, 71 of that was on one big play, but that's still a 100-yard game even without that. So the Vikings desperately needed someone else to make plays, and Jefferson did it. So if you have him in a redraft sitting on the bench or you have him in Dynasty, he made a big step here. I'll be curious to see the snap counts in this one to see how often he was on the field. But Justin Jefferson helps avoid kind of that, you know, dreaded rookie receiver, just kind of goose egg. So this big game really helps, and let's see how he goes moving forward.
Yeah, Justin Jefferson was actually the second wide receiver in PPR points today with 30.5 as he went 7 for 175 and a touchdown. He's only rostered in 30% of Yahoo leagues. Should we be racing to pick up Justin Jefferson come Tuesday?
I mean, if you've had the room, I don't see why not. I mean, we were worried about him and Thielen kind of both stealing the slot roles from each other. That's why I'm interested to see how many snaps Jefferson had. But I mean, they need somebody. So I think if you got room, throw him on your bench. I don't know exactly if he's startable right away, but he's a talented player. And if this team keeps playing like this, they're going to need to throw a lot.
Mike, who's your big winner of the day?
So I'm going to cheat a little bit. I've picked two players from the same game, but they're at the same position, so I feel like it kind of works. Darrell Henderson and Devin Singletary. So Darrell Henderson, because he just dominated the workload, and I think he looked great doing it. I always thought he was more talented than Malcolm Brown, and he's got the room right now to really steal this thing and just, pun intended, run away with it. But 20 carries, he had, I think, a few targets, and I don't see any reason why they would change that. I mean, sure, Malcolm Brown's always going to be a thing, but if I had a bet, I would say Henderson's going to take the better end of the workload here week to week, and I definitely think he's the better talent. In Buffalo, I'm going with my guy Devin Singletary. I liked what I saw. It wasn't an amazing day for him. No touchdowns, but he did have 13 carries and 5 targets. The big win here is that the Buffalo passing game, surprisingly, might have to be respected. That's not something I imagined I would be saying at any point this year, because I kind of thought Josh Allen was terrible. But if you have to respect Josh Allen running and respect his arm, Devin Singletary is going to have some room to run. And it seems like that backfield's all his. So I love both of those guys moving forward.
All right, so Daryl Henderson and Devin Singletary, Mike's winners. And we'll get into them and more when we get to the Rams-Bills game. Mike, let's stay with you. Who's a loser of the day for you?
Oh, I hate to say it a week after I called him a winner, but I got to go with Jonathan Taylor. This seemed like the kind of game where he should have really eaten. And it wasn't terrible. He still ended up with 13 carries. But there was a really split around. Jordan Wilkins saw a lot. Naeem Hines saw a lot. And I kind of was hoping Taylor would just run away and dominate. And it's clearly not going to be the case week to week. And if there was any game where one running back should be able to just sit there and dominate, it's against the Jets. But it just didn't happen. So it's going to be a little bumpier than we hoped. Still gave you a good week. Just wasn't quite the week I was hoping from him.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor, 13 for 59, did score a touchdown, so that definitely salvaged the day. But, you know, only one target after, you know, we kind of talked about him, especially in week one, is potentially getting a lot of the passing work. You know, Phillip Rivers loves to throw to running backs. And, I mean, I get what you're saying, Mike, but at the same time, you know, the Colts really never – it was never in question that they were winning this game. And so I feel like, you know, there's definitely a bit of, you know, why do we need to keep running Taylor out there when Jordan Wilkins can very easily just take some of the carries. I mean, 9 carries and then 7 carries for Naeem Hines, which that might be the most carries he's going to get all season. So I hear what you're saying for sure. Eric, do you share Mike's sentiment on Jonathan Taylor being a loser for today?
I don't know if I'd say loser. It was definitely disappointing, though. I mean, I agree with everything you both of you all said, really. I was expecting a huge game, and we didn't get it. So, yeah, it may just been the Colts, you know, picking passes to the house off of Darnold right from the start. So maybe in a little more competitive of a blowout, they can really get him going. But sure, if you played him in DFS, it was not what you were hoping for.
So, Eric, then who's your loser for the day?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Carson Wentz here. I got firsthand view of him playing the Bengals. And you know my opinion on this Bengals defense, especially without Geno Atkins. Not very high on them. So Wentz just really struggled just from the start. I mean, only 225 yards passing on 47 attempts. He does bail you out with 65 yards rushing and a touchdown, but he threw two really bad picks, was sacked 3 times. It's just not a lot of encouraging stuff here. Dallas Goedert might be hurt for a few weeks. That's one less weapon. And, I mean, you know, there's just some stat lines here, like Miles Sanders got 4 receptions for 12 yards on 8 targets. There's just a lot of ugly stuff in this game. And then, you know, down the stretch in overtime, they just didn't even look like they wanted to win this game. So very discouraging for Carson Wentz. He'll still be, you know, playable. But I think if you were hoping for a breakout this year, it's pretty clear it's not coming anytime soon.
Well, and so I actually wrote down in the notes section for this game, if it's time for those of us who, you know, drafted Carson Wentz to cut bait, you know, I mean, like you said everything really that you needed to say on Wentz there. So are you at the point now where if you drafted Wentz, are you dropping him looking for something better?
I mean, I'm definitely looking. I mean, we just saw Gardner Minshew disappoint as a streaming option. So it depends who's on waivers, obviously. And it's hard to tell on quarterbacks, too, because they vary so much from league to league. Some leagues will be empty and some will have some, you know, bona fide starters. So, but yeah, if there's something on waivers that you're interested in, I wouldn't hold back here. I mean, maybe even like Ryan Tannehill, he's looked a lot better than Wentz has so far. So I think that's about the range you're looking at. Don't just go cutting them and picking up, you know, I don't know, Daniel Jones or something, but you definitely be looking at your waiver wire.
Well, how about dropping Wentz for a quarterback that's rostered in only 2% of leagues right now, and that's Nick Foles? Should we be taking a page out of the Eagles playbook from a few years ago and replace Wentz with Foles?
I'm going to defer to Mike on that one.
Ooh, I was afraid of that. Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I'm definitely looking at the matchups. I can't remember who the Bears are playing this coming week. I think it's another decently easy matchup. Might be Indianapolis. I'm definitely okay playing the matchups. I think Foles has better weapons right now in Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller. But I don't think Wentz is just going to like completely disappear. I know we've seen good from him before. He had a near MVP season before. He's got the talent to put good games together. But that being said, you really, really, really thought the Bengals were going to be the get right game if there ever was one for the Eagles.
Right.
And the fact that they put a tie down is just awful.
Yeah, and this is actually jogging my memory now because we talked about this on Sit Start. Next three for the Eagles are 49ers, Steelers, and Ravens. So, yes, move on. Find somebody else right away.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely safe to say you can drop Carson Wentz. Whether you go for Nick Foles or a different quarterback is up to you. As it sounds like Mike, you know, our Bears expert here, is still on the Foles is a matchup-dependent play. So maybe just look at who's available on your waiver wire and see who their upcoming opponents are when deciding to drop Wentz. Let's get into the injury news. Unfortunately, there's still quite a bit. Not as bad as last week, so that's good. Definitely not as bad as last week, but we did have another ACL tear as the Bears fear Tariq Cohen tore his ACL. So, you know, Cohen, the RB2 there in Chicago. I mean, coming into this week, he was the 59th ranked running back in terms of fantasy points. So, you know, this may not mean as much for Cohen. You know, if you had Cohen, you probably weren't starting him anyway. But what does this mean for David Montgomery, Mike?
So I hate to say an injury is a good thing for anybody, but I think this is a great thing for Montgomery. He's getting one less person competing with him in the backfield. The Bears kind of used Montgomery as an afterthought today. I mean, he got a decent number of carries, but it just seemed like they didn't really even want to use him. It seemed like they wanted to go with Cohen and Cordarrelle Patterson. I think some of this passing work is going to trickle to Montgomery. I think he's going to get more carries. I think it's basically now just Montgomery and Patterson. So, yeah, I think this has to raise Montgomery's stock, as well as how good the offense looked at the end of the game.
Yeah, and then going to Atlanta's side of the ball, Julio Jones wasn't active. He aggravated his hamstring injury in week two and didn't practice at all this week. And then Russell Gage left the game in the first half as he entered the concussion protocol. So something to monitor moving forward. Obviously, we have no idea what their status is for week four. Both of them could very easily be back by then. So, you know, nothing really actionable on that right now, just something to keep an eye on. However, Chris Carson did leave the game. You know, he was grabbing his knee area. I think he did walk off, but not, you know, he did have some assistance. So, you know, if Chris Carson, if this is a lengthy injury, are we going after Carlos Hyde immediately? You know, what are we doing in the Seattle backfield, Eric?
Oh, yeah, I'd be going after Carlos Hyde. I mean, Russell Wilson's just looking so good right now. I think you're going to take anyone involved here. Last I saw, Penny is a ways away from returning. He's coming off a major injury. They got Travis Homer some work right afterwards, but I would certainly go get Carlos Hyde. I think he can fill in and do a pretty good Chris Carson imitation for a couple weeks. Hopefully Carson's not out long, but yeah, definitely interested in Hyde.
I think I read that Rashad Penny isn't even eligible to come back until sometime in mid to late October from being on the pup list. So, yeah, definitely Carlos Hyde is the man there in Seattle. And then Chris Godwin left against the Broncos with a hamstring injury. It wasn't a contact injury. He just, you know, pulled his hamstring, it looked like, running a route. So, you know, he did have 5 receptions for 64 yards and a touchdown before then, but something to definitely keep an eye on. Wide receivers with hamstring injuries are no good. Just like the Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams, who left with a hamstring injury. With Mike Williams, though, he wasn't really being, you know, targeted much under Justin Herbert, and he only had, you know, one catch today for 17 yards. He did have another target, but was offensive pass interference. So 2 targets today under Herbert. At this point, regardless of Williams' injury status, is he droppable, Mike?
Yeah, I would say so. It looks like all is right with the world in LA again, and Keenan Allen is eating up the targets. And I think it's pretty clear that Keenan Allen's the better receiver. And between Allen and Eckler, I think they're going to be the major two targets, and there's not going to be left behind them. And whatever's left behind them, I think next goes to Henry. So I'm okay with dropping Williams. I think wide receiver's deep, and we're always seeing guys pop up. So yeah, I'm good with dropping him if you need to.
couple other wide receivers with an injury. Deontay Johnson had a concussion, so he, you know, didn't come back to the game. Again, keep an eye on that moving forward, as concussions are always unpredictable. And then John Brown did not have a catch, only had two targets. He did have a calf injury and didn't play in the second half. But even before that, he really wasn't involved. Are you where are you at on John Brown? Is that something to be concerned about? You know, regardless of the injury, obviously, if he's going to miss time, you know, that's going to, you know, you're not playing him. But if he's back, are you concerned, Eric?
I mean, if he's back, I think it's probably fine. It's just concerning. I think he was on the injury report with a foot thing this week during practice, and now it's in the calf. John Brown's had a lot of injury issues in the past before last year. So definitely something to worry about if you have him. And the Bills have made it pretty clear that they like Gabriel Davis, the rookie, quite a bit. I think he's probably going to need Brown like full on out of the lineup to be much this year. But if Brown does miss, he's really interesting. And Gabriel Davis is super interesting in Dynasty because he's already making a mark. And he's a for a later round rookie receiver. It's pretty impressive.
All right, so keep an eye on Gabriel Davis, especially in relation to John Brown's injury status. If he misses time, Davis might be someone we're streaming. And actually, Cole Beasley might be someone as well. Went off today, 6 receptions, 100 yards. And Beasley's been involved all 3 weeks. Not a lot of yardage every week, but has definitely you know, been targeted quite a bit. You know, nice little safety blanket there for Josh Allen. So a couple of wide receivers in Buffalo to keep your eye on. And then finally, Dallas Goedert. It looks like he turned his ankle in the first half. Didn't really play after that. I think he came back on for one drive, but was clearly not able to be out there. So keep your eye on him moving forward. If you have Goddard, you probably picked him up, which means you either have two tight ends on your roster or, you know, you didn't have anyone good there in the first place. So might be worth going out and finding yourself another tight end. As we've talked about before, tight end is deep this year. There are a lot of tight ends who have been really involved. And actually we have 3 new additions to the top performers at tight end this week. So, you know, if Goddard's going to miss time, I think it's safe to drop him and move on. But Eric, Mike, you know, feel free to you know, correct me on that.
Yeah, I that sounds right. I mean, unless he's just kind of like a week or so. But if it's going to be more 2, 3, 4 weeks, I would move on. Because, yeah, I don't like having 2 tight ends for the most part anyway. So let's go get someone who's exciting on waivers.
Yeah, I completely agree. If he's gone more than 2 weeks, just dump him and move on, because he might not. It might take longer, and if you're sitting on him for 3 or 4 weeks, you're holding off and picking up that wide receiver or that running back, you're going to hurt your team elsewhere.
All right, so definitely a lot of injuries that are just kind of unclear yet as to the severity of them. So a lot of injuries to monitor this week. Let's move to the top performers at each position. Go from, you know, maybe it's a little bit of downer news to some more upper news. So quarterback, 3 obvious names here: Russell Wilson, Josh Allen, and Dak Prescott. Josh Allen has actually been in the top performers at quarterback list every single week so far this season. He's having one heck of a year, and Russell Wilson would have made the cut last week if his game happened before we did the notes. So Wilson, Allen, both having great weeks, great seasons, I mean. And then at running back, definite surprise here. Rex Burkhead is the number one running back this week, mostly because he scored 3 touchdowns. He had 98 total yards, 2 rushing touchdowns and a receiving touchdown. So, you know, just typical New England things. Mm-hmm. Austin Eckler had 143 total yards. He had 11 receptions and a rushing touchdown. And then Derrick Henry, this is the game we're all hoping for with Derrick Henry, 119 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, so obviously Eckler and Henry, we were hoping for this when we drafted him. Burkhead, this is just New England being New England, right? I mean, we've come to expect this every year from that backfield. Or is there something real here with Burkhead, Eric?
I mean, if it wasn't just James White missing time because of the, you know, tragedy in his family, then maybe you could be more interested in Burkhead. He's the type that you'll pick up, put on the bench, he does this, and then you start him next week and he does nothing. So once White comes back, I don't think there's much there. But I believe he was the team leader in targets on the Patriots. So it's not nothing for sure. But as soon as White comes back, I think it's over.
Yeah, Burkhead did lead the team in targets with 10 targets. He had 7 receptions for 49 yards. And let's move on to wide receiver. Tyler Lockett, the top receiver on the day. I mean, that's what happens when you score 3 touchdowns. 9 receptions for 100 yards as well. Justin Jefferson, 2nd. 7 receptions, 175 yards and a touchdown. And then Keenan Allen, 13 receptions, 132 yards and a touchdown. I mean, some really insane days in terms of volume and scoring. So, you know, big days from them there. And we talked about Jefferson already. We talked about Keenan Allen. You know, moving on to tight end, we had Jimmy Graham, Tyler Croft, and Eric Ebron. as our top three tight ends. All of them scored a touchdown. Graham and Croft scored two touchdowns each. And all three combined to have 35% rostership on Yahoo. Is there anyone here worth looking into?
Not Croft. Those were just short play action touchdowns, so I wouldn't be looking at him. Graham, I mean, I can't imagine this is real, but maybe Mike can change my mind on that. But he's been looked pretty over the hill lately. I don't know if he's going to score these touchdowns every week. I think Ebron's interesting if Deontay Johnson missed some time. He made a nice contested catch for a touchdown, but I think there's probably better options than all of them on most of your rosters already.
Yeah, I'll chime in there and say that I do like Graham if you're in a deeper league or if you're very desperate, which sounds kind of bad for Graham. But no, I think he was getting a ton of red zone targets today. It was clear that when they got in the red zone, they were looking his way, and he was a big part of that puzzle. I think he got more red zone targets than the running backs got carries in that area. And then he's getting a quarterback who's pretty familiar with playing with good tight ends, a quarterback who likes to throw to the tight end. So I could see it. I personally won't be starting him. I agree with Eric. He's looked too old these past few years, and I still have that picture in my head of Jimmy Graham is too old and slow. But I could definitely see it. I wouldn't be surprised if we see another decent outcome this coming week.
So if you're in a league where everyone rosters like two or three tight ends for some reason, looking at you, my home league, and you decided to stream tight end this year, maybe Jimmy Graham's like your option at like tight end 20 or something like that, which I have to go that low some of these weeks. That was mostly because I drafted George Kittle and have to replace him, and that sucks. I learned my lesson last year, I thought. And anyway, that's my home league stuff. We don't need to be talking about that. What we do need to be talking about are the biggest takeaways of the day. It's going to be a new section for us as we talk about some of the big picture things that happened in football that might change the landscape moving forward. So, Eric, no pressure, right? We're just talking about changing the landscape of the NFL. What's your top takeaway of the day?
I feel pretty good about this one. We danced around it for a while. This was a game that I covered for the What We Saw article, so I feel pretty confident in it. It's the Chargers passing game. Justin Herbert looks pretty legit. I mean, I can't believe how polished he looks considering the knocks on him coming out. But the big thing is his involvement with Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler. I mean, Eckler, we were just terrified of Eckler after the first week with Tyrod Taylor in there. He was not getting the ball in the passing game. They were running him up the middle. It looked like a lot of trouble. And all of a sudden, Eckler this game, 11 targets, 11 catches, 84 yards. Keenan Allen had 19 targets, 13 catches. They both had monster games. Now, I know not all weeks they're going to fall behind like they did in this game. We'll talk about that when we get to the game review. But, you know, they were down, they were throwing it, and Herbert looks a lot better than Taylor. So if Herbert is in there, all of a sudden Keenan Allen is like, oh, back-end wide receiver one in good matchups, a good wide receiver two in, you know, normal matchups. And there's just a lot more excitement here. And we saw Williams disappear, but he really focused on those two guys. And it's just a big change from what we saw week one.
Yeah, safe to say we had some, you know, changes to the passing landscape as two different quarterbacks, you know, really got their start here in week three. Foles midway through the game, and Herbert we knew about a few days ago with the whole Tyrod Taylor debacle. But still, you know, a lot really changing here in the passing game for a couple teams. Mike, what is your top takeaway of the day?
So my top takeaway is that maybe that we already knew this from last year, but the Detroit backfield is a mess.
You mean the past decade? Or two or three. Whenever Barry Sanders stopped playing is the last time the Detroit backfield wasn't a mess.
Yeah, so they take Swift, and I thought after the Bears debacle where he dropped that game-winning catch, I thought, okay, they're going to be smart. They'll throw the kid out there, let him gain his confidence, give him a lot of carries. You get one positive takeaway from the season, but he just disappeared, and it doesn't even seem like they want to use him. And I don't know why you take a rookie running back if you're not planning to throw him in there right away. I guess we'll have to ask the Seahawks with Rashad Penny. But, yeah, that backfield continues to be a mess. It continues to be one I want to avoid because next week I'll probably be saying, wow, Swift looked great, and he got 25 carries, and I can't believe it. And then the week after that, Kerryon Johnson will get 15 carries, and I'll be like, I've got no clue again.
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson with only three carries today. DeAndre Swift with two targets, no carries. And then a week after, you know, Johnson gets the touchdown and everyone was like, oh, I guess Adrian Peterson isn't a thing. He gets 22 carries, only 75 yards, no scores for Peterson, but still definitely getting the lion's share of the work there. I can do puns too, Mike. So Eric, what's your next biggest takeaway today?
Oh, you threw me off with that pun. Let me figure this out here. Oh, no. It's that Dan Quinn may be coaching some of the last games of his career here, I would say. The Falcons got outscored 20-0 in the fourth quarter, two straight weeks of just utter meltdowns. And, you know, I mean, they won the turnover battle. They ran for 144 yards. And, they, you know, that should be a game that they win. And they just laid a goose egg in the passing game, really, other than the first quarter. They let the Bears come roaring back with, you know, Foles under center. It's just, I mean, Dan Quinn's supposed to be a defensive-minded coach. This is not working. I know there are excuses with Julio Jones out. Russell Gage got a concussion. But, like, I mean, how many excuses can we make for Dan Quinn here? So if they get rid of him soon, you never know what that does to a team. Sometimes it sinks them. Sometimes new players get snaps. I don't know. But that was one of my big takeaways is I don't know how Dan Quinn can keep his job for much longer.
When you let the Bears score 20 points on you in the fourth quarter, you pretty much just lost your job.
Yeah. It's rough. It's I feel bad for Falcons fans. That's all I can say.
All right. So maybe Dan Quinn doesn't have many more days left in Atlanta. And then, Mike, what's your next biggest takeaway?
So I was going to talk about Tampa Bay, but I feel like that one's a little too easy. So I'm going to pivot to Cleveland. And I'm going to say that Nick Chubb is an RB1. He was worth the pick. And this experiment, at least through three games, is proving to be a good one, that Chubb and Hunt can both be successful. Chubb is definitely seeing the more carries. It looks like Hunt has been more in the passing game. Neither one's a huge factor in the passing game, but yeah, so far this experiment is working, and it also tells me that the passing weapons, if you can still find someone who wants to buy Odell Beckham, it might be time to ship him out, because I think that ship has sailed. It's surprising how fast he kind of disappeared. But yeah, just to kind of sum up, love the Cleveland running game. I want both parts of it if I can get them. Very strongly dislike the Cleveland passing game.
All right. And you did say Nick Chubb, worth the pick, potential RB1 rest of the season. So definitely high praises there for Cleveland, who, by the way, this is their first time with a winning record since 2014. So, and I'm sure everyone here who's hearing this already knows that because they saw it on Reddit or Twitter or literally everywhere, because that's all anyone can talk about. But hey, you know, great days ahead for Baker Mayfield and, you know, more so Chubb and Hunt, really. Yeah. But good for you, Cleveland. So let's get into the games. Let's start with this Chicago Bears Atlanta Falcons game, because, you know, as Mike, as you mentioned, the Bears scored 20 points in the fourth quarter, which is, you know, as you mentioned, Eric, the most Falcons thing ever. If Dan Quinn has any more games left in him, you know, I bet we can see some more fourth quarter, you know, debacles, interesting finishes, however you want to call it, depending on which side of the ball you're on. But, you know, the Bears today, tough day because they lost their two top rushers by yards per carry, is Tariq Cohen, who had 10.5 yards per carry, and Mitch Trubisky with 45 yards per carry. Both are, you know, out now. Tariq Cohen with the ACL injury and Trubisky got benched. I really just want to talk about the fact that Trubisky had 45 yards on that one carry. And, you know, hey, can Nick Foles do that? I don't think so. We talked about Nick Foles, matchup dependent, potential streamer, someone to keep an eye on, obviously, as he's a starter now. But what does this do to the value of the Bears pass catchers? Does this change anyone dramatically? I mean, Allen Robinson, it should still be Allen Robinson, but, you know, should we expect any changes for Anthony Miller or Darnell Mooney or Jimmy Graham, anyone like that?
So I was ready at about halftime. I was kind of preparing myself mentally for tonight, and I was thinking, man, I really have to say Allen Robinson was overrated. I got to walk that back and say I shouldn't have picked him so high as I was this year. And then Foles happened. And luckily I've been saved, because once he came in, the whole offense just seemed to click. There were a couple deep passes I know Trubisky threw that he kind of threw it a little too far, a little too out of bounds. Miller had one shot. I think Ginn had a shot. Tedkin Jr. And I just had this, like, you watch him play and you know he can't hit a deep ball, and it's disappointing because every defense knows, all right, we can just sit on you. But Foles was able to hit some deep shots, and I think that's going to open everything up. It should make the running lanes a little bigger for Montgomery. It should be a little more accurate passes for Robinson and Miller, so they don't have to run so many routes to catch the four or five balls they catch. So I may be a homer. I'll give the warning that I'm a Bears fan. But I think this is an upgrade for Montgomery, for Allen Robinson, Anthony Miller, and Jimmy Graham. And I would say if you're in a deep league, you could even keep an eye on Darnell Mooney.
All right, so value up for pretty much every Bears player, including David Montgomery, as we're hoping that the running lanes can open up. And then, you know, with the Falcons, this is a really disappointing day for them, you know, dropping down to 0-3. Obviously, they were hoping for a little bit better than that. And they've been, you know, kind of, well, they weren't really in that first game, a lot of garbage time there, but they were definitely in the game each of these last 2 weeks. Their offense is really banged up. Should we be keeping an eye on, I'm going to butcher this, Olamide Zaccheaus, if, you know, Julio Jones and Russell Gage aren't able to come back for week four?
No, not for me. I think it's just too far down the depth chart to be a big difference maker. I mean, we saw him last year. He had a big play or two, but I mean, Ridley, it's Julio. We don't think Julio's out super long. So no, I would be more interested in Hurst, even though he disappeared in this game. Three targets, one catch, but he did score a touchdown, maybe against a team that's not the Bears. They'll have a little better week, but they definitely need more help for Ridley though. I mean, he had 13 targets and five catches, 110 yards, but he had some big plays. He should have had a touchdown. He was just short. So he was good as always, but that five catches on 13 targets is not great. So they need someone to step up, and I don't think there's anyone who's going to do it other than Gage or Julio here.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned Hurst. So are you concerned about Hurst? You know, or we just, this is a tough defense, and we should be good moving forward.
I mean, I'm concerned about the whole team, honestly, other than Ridley and Julio, and, you know, Ryan when they're out there, but. I don't know. I think this is a team in disarray a little bit, and I don't know how they reshake things going forward. I've always been worried that they're just going to start pounding the ball and, you know, try to take it out of Matt Ryan's hands a little bit if they start going south. So I hope that doesn't happen. But I think Hurst is, he's probably worth a bench spot, but this is certainly not one catch for 1 yard and a touchdown is not what you're looking for.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning too. Brian Hill had a nice carry. If you're looking at the stats, you're seeing 9 for 58 and thinking, wow, they should make him the lead back. Outside of one really nice carry where I'll admit he looked pretty great on it. He didn't show me much. It wasn't like, oh, wow, he's going to be the starter. Gurley's going to get benched. I still thought Gurley was the better runner. So if you're looking at this in hindsight, if you're seeing those stats, don't get pulled in by that 58 yards, the high yards per carry and that touchdown. I think besides that one play, he was just a pretty mediocre day for him.
Yeah, 8 for 23 for Brian Hill outside of that 35-yard run. And then Todd Gurley, 14 for 80. Actually, probably his best game of the season so far with a touchdown to boot. So, you know, something to keep an eye on. If you have Gurley already, so if you have him, you're still starting him. Brian Hill, as Mike said, not someone, you know, you really need to be picking up, especially since Gurley is going to continue to get a lot of the work. So I think we've talked a lot about this Bears-Falcons game already. We can move on to New York, where the San Francisco 49ers just absolutely demolished the New York Giants. The final score, 36-9. 49ers moved to 2-1 on the season. They did get another couple of injuries at MetLife. I think they're very happy to not have to go back there again. Jordan Reed this time, you know, went down, and that means they, you know, are out, what, their wide receiver one, the RB1 and RB2, their quarterback one, their tight end one and two, and like a whole bunch of dudes on their defense. So, you know, with all that means that there's opportunity for other players like Jerick McKinnon and Jeff Wilson Jr. and Jermichael Hasty, who we've talked about, I think, more than anyone all week long. So, Eric, what did you see in the San Francisco backfield today?
It's about how I thought it was going to go, honestly. I mean, I don't think Jerick McKinnon is going to be just a high volume workhorse. So that leaves a lot of room for the other running backs. Hasty didn't do much in his first game. Understandable, just called up from the practice squad. But I mean, McKinnon looked like the best back, 14 carries, 38 yards and a touchdown. He adds in three catches for 39. But Jeff Wilson Jr., it's a horrible yards per carry. It's, you know, 1.3 yards per carry, but he gets you a rushing touchdown and he catches a fairly long touchdown. I think about a 20 yarder. He had three catches for 54 total. So Jeff Wilson is the goal line touchdown guy. Jerick McKinnon's a little more exciting, but I think his upside is capped. So Hasty is still interesting in deep dynasty leagues and stuff like that, and I would maybe keep him starred on your watch list. But I don't know. I think you can play. I mean, I was in some tough spots in some deep leagues, and I played Wilson, and I was happy. So I know I got bailed out by the touchdowns, but this is still a Kyle Shanahan offense here, so I want these running backs if I can.
And then Nick Mullins got the start today with Jimmy Garoppolo out for the next few weeks. So what are your thoughts on how he did today, and what does that mean for the viability of this 49ers passing, you know, offense?
I mean, it's the Giants, so I don't know how much we take from this, but and, you know, we've seen Shanahan fill in with backup quarterbacks before, so this isn't too much of a surprise for me. I think Ayuk is the receiver I'm most interested in, just being a first-round draft pick. He looked good, had a nice rushing touchdown, 100 yards altogether with rushing and receiving. So, yeah, Ayuk's my most targeted player. Bourne, I think he'll go away once Debo gets back.
Yeah, I'll say quickly on this one. I was going to say they play the Giants, so, you know, take a grain of salt on everyone looking a little better than they should. But they have the Eagles and the Dolphins coming up, so everyone might continue to look better than they should. I'm fine with taking a shot in this running back group. You know, maybe you pick McKinnon or Hasty or Wilson and say, all right, I'm a little desperate. I got some injuries. I lost Barkley or McCaffrey. You could do much worse because, as Zarek said, they all scored. I just wouldn't count on any to be a superstar because – this offense seems to not want to use one guy over and over. It's kind of week to week, and just accept that if you throw McKinnon in there, you might very well get like 10 yards on five carries, and that could be it.
Yeah, Jeff Wilson's still only rostered in 22% of leagues on Yahoo, so definitely someone that you should be going out there and picking up. This is exactly what we thought we would see in terms of volume. Obviously, the two touchdowns really saved his day, but I also don't think he's only going to go 12 for 15 again. That's kind of worst case scenario for him on the ground. So, Wilson, someone to keep an eye on for sure. And as Eric mentioned, Brandon Ayuk, receiver to keep an eye on as well. And then I don't want to spend too much time on them because, boy, this was ugly. But the New York Giants offense, we have to talk about this backfield because there was a lot of chatter about it before the game. But do we want to talk about this backfield, Eric?
Not really. I didn't want to talk about him beforehand. And let's see, 15 carries for 66 yards and 49 of that Daniel Jones.
I was going to say that was a lot of Daniel Jones there. So
Yeah. You put the running backs together. It's 17 yards rushing on 10 carries. So no, I mean, maybe Freeman gets the offense down and he gets a big enough of a role, but I think he's going to need a massive role for it to matter on this team. I mean, Deion Lewis only saw three targets. So no, I'm passing on all of them.
Mike, did you see anything from this Giants backfield that Eric missed?
So I'd consider Freeman. I keep watching Freeman because they could be still getting him up to speed. And, you know, I'll give him a weak pass for that. That being said, the offense is just terrible. Even with Sterling Shepard and Saquon Barkley, they were not a good offense. And now you lose your best weapon and one of your best receivers. And, yeah, it's just going to keep getting uglier. I mean, I can't see any reason to start any receiver here. I don't want to start Jones. Freeman, maybe, depending on how the next couple weeks look. I still think he's worth a hold. But yeah, other than that, just throw the rest away.
Well, the Giants have the Rams, the Cowboys, and the Washington football team in their next three games. So, I mean, none of those are, you know, as scary as San Francisco, but I don't think any of them are really pushovers in the rushing game either. So, and then the only other player really worth talking about here, Evan Ingram, who a lot of people were counting on, you know, as a, you know, tight end one and be, you know, set and forget kind of tight end, but, you know, 3 for 22 today and honestly really a disappointing start to the season in general for Ingram. So, you know, if you drafted Ingram, what should they be doing? Are we holding on to him? Should they be looking for a second tight end and just have Ingram on the bench for a little while? I mean, what are you doing if you drafted Ingram?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Try to find someone better and hold on to him on the bench for a little bit. I mean, he's the type of player that I'll just keep rolling out there every week and suffering through terrible lines because he's got so much potential. But you should probably have more willpower than I do and just throw him on the bench, get someone else in there, and maybe he'll wake up and then you can get him back in the lineup.
I'll give you the bold take and say at this point I would just dump him. I know he was probably expensive, and maybe I say this as someone who doesn't tend to believe in Evan Ingram. But this offense is just so putrid that even if you gave all the work to one person, it's still barely a good day.
Yeah, he had a long of 9 yards, which is really concerning because he should be a downfield threat.
All right, well, that's the New York Giants offense for you. If you have any of them on your team, I'm sorry. Let's go to another team with a great defense. That was the Pittsburgh Steelers, who won their game 28-21 over the Houston Texans. Steelers moved to 3-0 on the season. Texans to 0-3. I know I talked about it in the Week 3 preview, but what a brutal start to the season for the Houston Texans. I mean, just, you know, absolute juggernaut of a schedule to begin the year. Hopefully they have some easier days ahead. Yeah, they've got the Vikings and the Jaguars and the Titans, so definitely not as bad as Chiefs, Ravens, Steelers. Yeah. But let's talk about Will Fuller, who completely disappeared against Baltimore and everyone was scared to start him. And then he scores a touchdown today. I want to say publicly, I told my friend to bench Will Fuller for Julian Edelman. I told him I was concerned about the Steelers defense and Fuller's disappearing act. And I just need to publicly apologize. So David, my bad, dude. what did I miss on how Houston handled this tough defense? How did Fuller break loose?
You didn't miss anything. I mean, he got five targets and he caught a touchdown. So, I mean, you know, he caught four or five for 54. You miss out on that touchdown. You know, maybe there's a holding call or something. You're looking at three for, you know, 20 something. So you didn't miss it. It's just you're just happy you escaped these tough matchups if you have Fuller. And now outside of the health stuff, you can feel pretty safe about starting him going forward because it's not as bad as Baltimore and Pittsburgh. So get him back in your lineups and just cross your fingers as usual with the health.
And then David Johnson, I mean, 13 for 23 today, did score a touchdown. Do we just write these past 2 weeks off as these are two of the best defenses in the league? Or is there more reason to be concerned about David Johnson, Mike?
I'm not too concerned. He's still getting the lead role. He doesn't have any competition there. I mean, CJ Prosise getting one carry. That's nothing that's going to make me worried. It just didn't seem like a great day for the offense in general. But when you have a great quarterback like Deshaun Watson, I'm going to tend to bet that they'll have good days. When they're playing bad or mediocre defenses, I think they're going to show up. He's still a running back in a lead role. And luckily today he got the touchdown to kind of save things a little bit. But yeah, it's going to be a little bit bumpy. This isn't an amazing Texans team. The good news for them, though, is I heard a rumor that in 2018 they started 0-3 and they still made the playoffs. So there's some reason for hope if you're a Texans fan.
All right. Well, you know, some reason for hope is really all that they need right now because it's not looking great for them to start the year. But again, like I said, I mean, three of the toughest matchups to begin the year. So hopefully better days ahead for Houston. And then Pittsburgh, James Conner had another great game today, 18 for 109 with a touchdown. But the thing that I found the most interesting in this Pittsburgh backfield is that Anthony McFarland Jr. and Benny Snell Jr. combined for 13 carries. And that's very atypical from what we're used to seeing in this Pittsburgh offense. So, you know, 13 carries in what was not a blowout for the backup running backs. What does that mean for this Pittsburgh running game? And what does that mean for James Conner, Eric?
Well, Snell turned it into 7 for 11. I'm not real high on Snell, so I don't think he's a big threat other than just to, you know, kind of give Connor a breather. McFarland would be the worry just because he's the fresh new rookie who's got some big playability, and he turned 6 carries into 42 yards. So maybe they're changing a little bit here, but, I mean, Connor still got 18 carries, 109 yards rushing, 4 catches in the passing game. So as long as this offense is humming, I wouldn't worry too much about Connor, kind of like Fuller, other than the health stuff. I wouldn't be that scared here unless McFarland just keeps ripping off big plays. But Connor's still pretty much the bell cow as far as, you know, compared to most backfields in the NFL, he's a bell cow. So and before we completely move on, I can't not mention Randall Cobb. I know you all are sick of hearing about him, but 4 catches for 95 yards and a touchdown on 4 targets. I still think they need to get him the ball more. He's not explosive, but they need that intermediate option. So Steelers looking good, and I think the Texans are still kind of figuring out this offense.
Oh, you know I was going to make you work for that victory lap, Eric. I wasn't just going to hand it to you on a silver platter.
Yeah.
So James Conner is still mainly the bell cow. Like you said, you know, in terms of the new NFL and kind of where we're all headed, I mean, Conner, you know, getting 18 carries is still, you know, one of the higher amount of carries on the week. So nothing to be concerned about. And actually, I almost think that this may be the new normal in Pittsburgh just to make sure that Conner doesn't get hurt. It could be, you know, Pittsburgh's finally seeing, hey, maybe if we ease up a little bit on this dude who always seems to get injured, maybe he won't get injured. I don't know. Weird thought process. Might be a new one. Might have just thought of it myself. But hey, you know, coming up with new stuff every day in the NFL.
Don't give these coaches these ideas of resting their star players, please.
Yeah, not good for our fantasy teams. Mike, is there anything else to take away on this Pittsburgh side of the ball in the passing game, in the running game, anything else?
Yeah, I'll just say quickly, I think you're right. I think Connor's comfort zone should be somewhere in the 15 to 20 touch range to keep him healthy. And this Pittsburgh team, 3-0, they're a smartly run organization. They definitely have an eye on the future, and I think it's smart to limit Connor a little bit. And it, as we saw today, it didn't affect him. He ate, he got plenty. He got, you know, five targets, 18 carries. I think that's the comfort zone. If you saw him getting 25 carries, I'd be worried and say, oh, he's not going to last a month.
Yeah, and I would also say with Deontay Johnson going out with a concussion, Juju didn't exactly take off. 5 targets, 4 catches, 43, and a touchdown. Really, none of the other receivers took advantage of Deontay Johnson missing, other than Eric Ebron, if you count him. So it was really spread around by Roethlisberger, and James Washington didn't do anything special. Neither did Claypool. So I'm assuming Johnson's back in there. I still think I like him more than Juju. He's just got to stay on the field.
Yeah, and I mean, that was tough. You know, they used Deontay Johnson in the end around, and those plays, you know, always have blow up potential, and yeah, you know, those guys can get hit hard in the backfield. So, you know, it's unfortunate for Deontay Johnson, but hopefully he'll be back next week. Is you know, just a concussion. Let's go to Buffalo, where the Bills hung on to beat the Rams. Well, they came back to beat the Rams, 35-32. 3-0 for the Bills, 2-1 for the Rams, and the Rams on the opposite side of a controversial fourth quarter defensive pass interference. So, I mean, this wasn't a conference championship game. Stakes are much lower, obviously, but I think they're still paying for their 2018 Super Bowl appearance. Yep. So, but staying with the Rams, big day for Cooper Kupp. I think that's great. Eric, you were a little concerned about Cooper Kupp's volume coming into this game, and Robert Woods obviously still involved. So definitely great sign there for the Rams passing attack. And we talked about Daryl Henderson, Mike. He was your big winner of the day, and he seems to be running away with the job. You know, Malcolm Brown did get 7 carries, but Henderson 2 weeks in a row now has looked like the much better running back. If Cam Akers is back, what does that mean, you know, for Henderson? Are we still rolling him out there, or would Akers kind of worry you a bit, Mike?
Whew, that would be a tough week to pick a starter. I think I would still roll with Henderson. I think Akers already having an injury, they would have to roll him back into the offense slowly. I wouldn't go throw him out there with like 20 carries right away. So at least for that first week, I'd probably still feel safe with Henderson. I'd feel very nervous starting Brown or Akers. It wouldn't surprise me to see either kind of get blanked out of the game based on how things are looking. Yeah, so I would say Henderson would be my top choice. Then maybe Akers, just slightly above Brown.
Eric, you did call it in week one. This Malcolm Brown did this exact same thing last year.
Yeah.
And it's only 7 for 19 today. Do you agree with Mike's assessment? You're still good with Henderson if Akers is back?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to keep playing Henderson unless I'm just loaded at running back. They did split the snaps, 34 each. So Brown's on the field a lot, but this team is running it a lot. I mean, even in this crazy game where they fell behind, they had 32 pass attempts and 32 rushes. So they want to run the ball. Henderson's the more explosive player. I agree with Mike. When Akers comes back, it's going to be a little messier. I still think we can play Henderson. And like down the line, this is Henderson and Akers taking over, I'm pretty certain. We'll just see if this injury lingers on Akers and if it limits him. But I'm still holding all of them. Brown, I don't know. Maybe you could move on in some leagues. I think he's still going to get some touchdowns, though. So I like this backfield. And I think they're going to, I mean, against Buffalo here, they ran for 167 yards. So that's super encouraging.
And then let's move to the Buffalo side. You know, we talked about Devin Singletary already. We mentioned, you know, the 13 carries and the 5 targets, but he did also get 50 yards on those targets. So 121 total yards for Singletary on the day. Obviously, if Zach Moss comes back, that's going to, you know, change things up because TJ Yeldon and Isaiah McKenzie only combined for 4 carries in this backfield. And Moss usually gets around 10. But, you know, if Moss continues to be out, Singletary definitely looking like a big winner moving forward. And then Josh Allen continuing to really break out and show that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league this year. 311 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 horrible interception. And I say horrible, not like he did anything wrong, but a horrible call. It's funny. I'm looking at the ESPN box score and they have these little, you know, videos on the side. And it literally says John Johnson takes ball away for amazing interception. I'm just like, no. the refs took the ball away for an amazing interception. Watch the play. Really, really terrible call. So Josh Allen, you know, great game. What, I mean, we've been talking about this passing game for weeks now. Eric, you talked about it earlier, but what does this do? What are you thinking in terms of the Buffalo Bills wide receivers? Are you looking at Beasley? Are you looking at Davis? What are you doing with these guys?
Yeah, this was encouraging. I mean, Ramsey was on Diggs, and I think Diggs missed out on another touchdown, right? I think he had some penalties on some plays. Diggs could have had a bigger day. And so the fact that he survived, that's a great sign. Davis looks good. Beasley looked good. We'll see how long Brown's out. But yeah, this is All systems go for this passing offense. It was pretty wild when they were coming back towards the end. I mean, Josh Allen's just like ricocheting off of people in the backfield and running around in circles and then just launching it downfield. So it's a lot of fun to watch. And it always looks like it's going to fall apart. But I mean, he's thrown for 300 yards every game and lots of touchdowns. So I think they've got this thing figured out. And I'm buying pretty much any of these receivers that are out there getting snaps.
Yeah, Josh Allen really reminds me a lot of Dak Prescott, actually, two kind of really big quarterbacks that are very difficult to take down, and that gives them, allows them to keep plays alive. That's the, one of the big things that I think really has made Dak one of the top quarterbacks this past year or so, is that ability. So I think we're seeing that from Josh Allen, and that's got to be encouraging moving forward. Mike, any last takeaways for you from this Buffalo team?
No, as I said, I think the big winners here are Josh Allen, who is proving he's legit. I still feel weird saying it. I still don't like saying it. But yeah, he's proving he's legit. And Devin Singletary got plenty of work here. And even though he's never going to be the red zone threat, I wouldn't say, it's proving that it doesn't really matter. He can get enough in the middle of the field where he doesn't necessarily need to clean up in the red zone.
All right, so let's move on to Minnesota, where the Tennessee Titans moved to 3-0 as they beat the Vikings 31-30. You know, they really held on to this one. Minnesota had a chance, and Kirk Cousins went from being a good quarterback to being Kirk Cousins. He fumbled it, cost them 14 yards, and then threw a pick on, you know, 4th and 24, and that sealed the game. So Titans 3-0. And they've outscored their opponents by a combined total of 6 points. So if you're a Tennessee Titans fan, you might want to invest in some heartburn medicine, or, know where your hospitals are, because this is the heart attack team for sure. But let's talk about the running game, because on both sides of the ball, this was definitely the Derrick Henry game and the Dalvin Cook game that, you know, we've all been waiting for. You know, are we ready? Are we all systems go finally with these two guys moving forward? I mean, it's kind of dumb to say because they're studs, but they both haven't really, you know, gotten there yet up until this point. So, Eric, you know, what are your thoughts on these two running backs?
Yeah, this was great to see from Dalvin Cook, especially. I think we knew that, you know, Derrick Henry was being Derrick Henry. Just, we were waiting on the touchdowns from him. But Dalvin Cook, 22 carries, 181 yards, busted a 39-yarder. Yeah, it was just really great to see from Cook. He looked good and explosive. I will say, I mean, the passing game work isn't real exciting for him this year. Only 2 catches for 18 on 5 targets. Eli Grabansky on our staff has been tweeting out stuff with play calling tendencies, and that was actually something I noticed that he'd retweeted earlier in the season, or before the season started, was Kubiak actually doesn't throw to the running backs a ton. So it is kind of playing out with Cook. His passing game work hasn't been very exciting so far, but when you're getting 181 yards on the ground, that's fine. So that would be the only hesitation with Cook, is let's get him some more screens. Let's get him 4 or 5 catches a game, and then that really makes him kind of, you know, not prone to these game script, you know, bad games, but he's still one of the best backs in the league, and I'm riding him every week.
Well, and Cook's loss may be Justin Jefferson's gain, because, you know, if Kubiak's not throwing to the running backs, they got to throw to someone. And in this case, you know, say Justin Jefferson with 9 targets, we talked about him already. But you know, if he's out there, definitely worth a stash pickup, or at least keeping your eye on him, because, you know, the Vikings definitely need more weapons they can rely on, because it's really not much outside of Cook and Thielen. And then on the Tennessee side of the ball, you know, a lot of people were talking about some potential breakout players for Tennessee, you know, including Corey Davis. But, you know, like I had mentioned on Twitter earlier today, Ryan Tannehill's not thrown for 4 touchdowns every single week, especially not on 24 attempts. And he actually threw for no touchdowns today. So, you know, this is definitely a tough passing game, you know, to have one of the receivers in. But Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, Adam Humphries, you know, A.J. Brown might be coming back. Is there anyone here in this Tennessee, you know, receiving game that you feel good about, Eric?
I mean, I still like Jonnu Smith a lot. He leads the way with 8 targets, 5 for 61. I just think he's a really impressive player. Corey Davis is fine. You can throw him out there while Brown's out, and he'll, you know, put up flex wide receiver 3 numbers for you. And I mean, Adam Humphries is pretty consistent when you need somebody if you've gone through a lot of injuries. So I'm not looking at Khalif Raymond. He'll do this a couple times a year, make some big plays. But I don't mind those players, Davis and Humphries. I think their ceilings are a little limited. But I'm starting Jonnu Smith pretty much every week if I've got him, unless I'm really loaded at tight end.
Mike, did you see anything in this game that kind of changed anyone's value for you, or anything else moving forward?
No, I'll agree that Jonnu Smith is still a great tight end option. Corey Davis is interesting because he's had, I believe, 5 targets in every game so far. So he's getting the volume. But again, it's without AJ Brown. And once he comes back, he's definitely the number one there. So yeah, just Jonnu Smith, full steam ahead with both running backs. And that's about it for the level of interest.
Yeah, it does seem like Brown is making very little progress. So I don't know. Maybe this is going to linger for a while and you can get some more work out of Corey Davis. We'll see.
All right, so let's head to New England, where the Patriots beat the Raiders 36-20. Patriots moved to 2-1 on the season, as do the Raiders, actually. First loss of the year for the Las Vegas Raiders. Sony Michel is the leading rusher against the Raiders so far this year. Outrushing by yards. Oh, let's see. Who have the Raiders? Oh, yeah, yeah. Alvin Kamara and Christian McCaffrey. So, you know, that's what we all expected from Sony Michel, right? Just big games in the rushing yards department. And then Rex Burkhead getting all the touchdowns and the scoring. So I don't know what to make of that, if anything. Is there anything there, Mike, or is this just New England backfield doing New England backfield things?
Yeah, for me, this is 100% New England being New England. You had Cam as the lead rusher 1 week. Now it's Sony Michel. Then it'll be Rex Burkhead. Then it'll be J.J. Taylor. Then James White will be back to take his turn. Yeah, I've never wanted to guess who's going to be the guy in this running game. So I'll continue to stay away, and I can go ahead and say that no receiver here really interests me. I think Cam is still worth easily the play. Yeah, he had a bad week this week, but that's fine. It'll happen. But otherwise, yeah, nobody.
Yeah, only 4 targets for N'Keal Harry after getting 12 last week. And then Julian Edelman, definitely a disappointing game. He did get 6 targets, but he only managed to turn that into 2 receptions for 23 yards. You know, a lot of people, you know, kind of rely on Julian Edelman. He's kind of in that flexish range. I think Eric, you had him ranked around wide receiver 30 coming into the week. Does this game kind of move you off of Edelman moving forward, or is this, you know, sometimes wide receivers have games like this?
I mean, it's interesting with the whole passing offense because, you know, you hate to kind of chase week to week what they did last week. But this was the worry from this Patriots offense, is just that they have a good defense. They run the ball a lot. And there could just be some of these weeks in store. If Cam's not getting the rushing touchdowns, he could have a down week. So kind of like how last week kind of proved me and Mike wrong with our preseason, you know, kind of outlook on Cam. This kind of reaffirms it. I agree. I still think that this is going to be a good passing game going forward. But, I mean, they ran 38 times for 250 yards. So I think when they can, they're going to do this. The Raiders have kind of been a little bit pesky on defense, surprisingly, this year. So, I mean, they look good against the Saints last week. So maybe we're underrating the Raiders' defense. So, you know, they put up 36 points. So we shouldn't probably complain too much. But, yeah, the passing game disappeared. So, no, I still think Edelman's a weekly starter. He'll have much better weeks than this.
Yeah, New England had a lead for pretty much the entire second half. You know, this is just one of those games. Newton only threw 28 times for 162 yards. So not a lot of volume in this New England offense. And last week they were playing Seattle, who you kind of have to throw a lot just to keep up with. So, you know, definitely cause for concern here in New England. Let's move to Las Vegas, where you know, I would love to do that actually, but let's move to the Las Vegas football team. And Josh Jacobs, 16 for 71. I mean, he got all the volume, so there's really not much to complain about here. It's a tough New England defense, you know, and not every time you're going to score a touchdown. So no reason to be concerned about Josh Jacobs, right?
No, he had 4 targets, 3 catches, so they are using him a little more in the passing game. So now same thoughts on Josh Jacobs as I had coming in.
Well, let's talk about this passing game because Henry Ruggs is out before the game starts, and Darren Waller only gets 4 targets. And no one else is really involved except for Hunter Renfro, who had 9 targets, 6 receptions, 84 yards, and a touchdown. I mean, you know, before the season started, no one knew what to make of this Raiders passing game. And it's been 3 games, and I think we still don't really know what to make of this Raiders passing game. I mean, am I wrong, Mike?
Yeah, I would say it's still Ruggs looked like he was going to be emerging into something, and it stinks to lose him to injury. Looking at Renfro's numbers so far and the performance he had today, it was a great game for him, but I'm definitely not buying in. This is the first of 3 weeks that he's really put something up that interests me, and I got to see at least 1 more week, probably 2 more weeks, to be like, oh, maybe he's starting to turn a corner here.
Yeah, and I would say I think Waller is just a classic. You know, they're going against Belichick. Waller just went nuts the game before, and yeah, Belichick made sure that they were going to stop Waller. So I'm still in on Waller going forward. It's just Gruden versus Belichick. I think I'll usually take Belichick in that matchup.
I think we can take Belichick in pretty much all coaching matchups, generally speaking. All right, so not really a whole lot changed, you know, in terms of our opinion in this game. You know, if you, you know, don't go after the New England Patriots running game, and maybe a little bit more cause for concern with their passing attack. But with the Raiders, pretty much everything is the same. Let's head to Cleveland. We talked about the Browns. Mike, you know, sang praises for their running game. You know, this, you know, Nick Chubb really had a big game that we've all been waiting for. Kareem Hunt was still very involved. He had 16 carries and he did catch a touchdown. So, you know, both of them are going to be viable moving forward. We talked about, you know, early in the show how this, you know, affects the passing game, and you really don't have much faith left in Baker. Well, I mean, we never really had faith in Baker, but in what that means for Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry. Eric, are you just holding on to these guys? Are you trying to trade them? Are you dropping them? Where are you at with OBJ and Landry?
I always hate selling low on players, so I'm probably just sitting on them, honestly. But, I mean, this is kind of like the Vikings, you know. Stefanski is taking a page out of his old playbook. Mayfield, only 23 attempts. Landry is usually a volume guy, four catches for on four targets for 36. So, yeah, it's just the volume's just not there. I'm sure they'll get some game scripts where they have to air it out, and they'll have better weeks, but that's not what they want to do. But yeah, I agree with everything Mike said with the running backs. I mean, Kareem Hunt, they split out wide in the red zone for that passing touchdown. He looked good. They get both of them involved in the red zone. So yeah, I'm just probably sitting with Beckham and Landry. Landry, you could probably bench some weeks. Beckham, you're probably stuck playing him as a wide receiver two or three all year. But I don't know. If you want to try to package him with someone, maybe you can get a good trade for him.
And then for Washington, I mean, we talk about messy backfields, and Washington definitely has one. But Antonio Gibson, once again, looked like the best rusher in Washington, and he only got 40% of the carries. Mike, when are they finally going to let Antonio Gibson loose?
Yeah, Antonio Gibson, I definitely like what I'm seeing athletically. It still feels like, to me, he's learning the position. Still feels like he needs to improve on some of the little things. He'd probably become a better pass blocker. But I definitely think he's the most exciting player in that backfield by a mile. And I don't think anybody would really argue that. His biggest competition was McKissick and our glorious Peyton Barber, who we all love. It's just tough because this is a bad offense with a bad quarterback. And I don't think they're going to be in a lot of great game scripts. And unfortunately, Gibson wasn't a big part in the passing game. So I think it's going to be tough to see the blowout game happening anytime soon. I mean, yeah, any week he could break a few runs and there you go. But yeah, I wouldn't be counting on him to be any kind of full-time starter anytime soon.
Yeah, if you look at the snaps, McKissick had 34, Gibson 25, and Barber 7. So I think we've gotten rid of Barber pretty well. It's just, yeah, when they're behind, they're going to get McKissick in there a lot. So I agree with all that.
Yeah, and because McKissick is so much better than Antonio Gibson. It's really frustrating. You know, it sucks that NFL teams, you know, think about what they think is best for their winning chances and don't think about our fantasy teams. It's honestly, it's really inconvenient and it's really disrespectful, and I won't have it anymore. Right. let's talk about the passing game. Mike, you mentioned, you know, Haskins, not a very good quarterback, but, you know, Terry McLaurin gets 8 targets. Logan Thomas gets 7, you know, McLaurin got 83 yards on those 8 targets and Thomas, you know, did turn them into 4 catches, but how much interest do you have in them moving forward? Are you still, you know, ready to roll them out there? Or where you at on McLaurin and Thomas?
Yeah, so I'm going to keep rolling McLaurin. No matter how bad a passing game gets, it can always support at least one wide receiver. I mean, we're the modern NFL where, you know, 300-yard passing games aren't too special anymore. So McLaurin, I'm definitely full speed. It stinks he didn't get a touchdown, but 83 yards, 4 receptions, that could be definitely worse. Logan Thomas, I still think you can play. The volume is just excellent. He continues to just be fed so much, and that's pretty rare in tight ends. And again, you hate the 4 for 31. That's going to sting a little bit. But if you threw a touchdown there, you'd say, oh, look, another great Logan Thomas game. So I'm rolling with him just because tight end is volatile, and I still think while he keeps getting the work, I got to keep starting him.
All right, so let's move ahead. Enough on those two teams. Let's move ahead to two other teams we definitely want to talk about in Philadelphia, where the Cincinnati Bengals and the Philadelphia Eagles tied at 23. We always get some of these weird tie games every year, and this was definitely one of them. And by the way, I mean, you know, I'm kind of making fun of the Eagles here, but they did do the best on the day of the NFC East because they're the only NFC East team that didn't lose today. So, you know, go Eagles. But, you know, I said one of these teams would no longer be winless, and they sure showed me. So I before we get into the fantasy aspect of this, I just have to ask, like, the Eagles, they're tanking, right? I mean, they're taking a page out of the trust the process. Like, why are they punting with 18 seconds left in overtime?
They took a false start first. They were lining up for like a 59 yarder, I think, false started. And then they could have tried a 64 yarder, which still seems better than punting with 19 seconds left. So it was awful. I mean, it was disappointing as a Bengals fan, this performance, but if I'm an Eagles fan today, I'm livid. I mean, they literally did not look like they cared much about winning. And I know a tie is better than a loss, but it felt like maybe you should go for the long field goal there. I mean, they've got a good kicker. He's made long kicks before. I don't, maybe they just knew the way the wind was, he couldn't make it or something, but pretty embarrassing all around. Really, the Bengals should have just won it in regulation. So not a good look there for the Eagles.
I mean, the Wentz could have thrown a Hail Mary. We know he hasn't really been accurate, but if you just throw it in the general direction of the people wearing green jerseys, you know, 64 yards down the field, you know, maybe he can at least get it to one of them. I don't know.
And then the Bengals fielded the punt, and I'm not that they were going to, you know, in 8 seconds or whatever, do anything, but they ran a draw. It was just beautiful. It was punt and draw to end the game or a tie. It was let's move on to next week.
Is there any fantasy takeaways here for either team? I mean, Tyler Boyd might be the best wide receiver in football, right?
No, I mean, all joking aside, Joe Burrow looks really good. His offensive line is killing him. He got sacked 8 times. Looked like he was going to get hurt a couple times. But Burrow is making really good decisions. He's missing on some deep balls, but he looks really talented. He's finally getting the targets to Boyd. 10 catches on 13 targets for 125 yards. He's clearly the best receiver. AJ Green was locked down by Darius Slay, so that was kind of, you can give him a little bit of gimme there. But then T. Higgins, he got the start. He's getting more snaps, the rookie, and he was 5 catches, 40 yards on 9 targets. He scored 2 touchdowns in the red zone. So Higgins is worth watching, especially if we find out that AJ Green is just over the hill, because they are desperately searching for some playmakers outside of Tyler Boyd.
And then you mentioned how bad the offensive line is. Is that what's contributing to Joe Mixon's season? I mean, 17 for 49 is definitely not what you're hoping for from a guy. Most people drafted in, I want to say, end of the first, maybe, you know, middle of the second, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who was hoping for more in the passing game, they were just hoping for Burrow to change that. But it was pretty clear from previous years. So, yeah, you're counting on touchdowns for Mixon, and you're counting on them to get a lead and be able to run the ball, and it's just not happening. So he looks like the same old running back. It's just this offensive line is awful.
And then maybe the only player that has any kind of takeaway in Philadelphia. I mean, well, Miles Sanders had another great game, 18 for 95, definitely looking like the running back we were hoping to see. Didn't score a touchdown, but again, you know, those will come. With Greg Ward, though, 8 receptions, 72 yards, led the team with 11 targets. And I mean, no Jalen Reagor, no Dallas Goedert for half the game. You know, is Ward someone that we should be looking at, Mike?
I'm not too interested in, I'm going to say no. I think some people will look at him, and that's a big target number. I'm just very put off by this whole offense right now. As Eric said, it didn't even feel like they wanted to win this game. It was just kind of a lackluster finish, and you know, you don't even try to win it at the end. And there's really not much to lose. You had that chance to say, like, hey, we're going after this. We're going to put a little statement on this season, even though it started horribly. And instead it was like, we just punt it. Then at least we won't take the loss. It just kind of felt like a very sad sack move. And I said to Eric earlier that, like, this is the most appropriate, like, tie we could have gotten in this season. The Bengals, who are bad but getting better, and, like, they're trying hard, and they're just not quite there. And the Eagles, who were supposed to be good and just look like they're just a nightmare. I think Miles Sanders, Zach Ertz, that's probably it here. I mean, Wentz did put up some huge rushing numbers, which actually made him a pretty good fantasy option, which is, again, kind of the cruelty of fantasy, that someone playing so horribly on such a bad team can put up good numbers. But everybody else, I'm going to be hesitant about. I think, you know, we could be seeing in a week Miles Sanders with more pass catching work. Dallas Goedert, maybe he's back sooner than we think, and he's catching passes. I mean, Greg Ward is usable, but yeah, I'm not too interested.
All right, so let's move on to a game where both teams were actually trying to win. That was the Dallas Cowboys in Seattle losing 38-31. One heck of a finish. Both teams just completely flip-flopping back and forth who was in the lead. And Cowboys, I guess, scored too early, gave Seattle too much time, and then just couldn't quite complete the comeback. But, you know, hey, amazing game. And honestly, I really don't think we learned a whole lot from this game because we all thought everyone was incredible, and they pretty much all were. Unfortunately, Carson did get hurt, and you know, if he is going to miss time, it is going to be Carlos Hyde. We did touch on that in the injury section at the beginning. Other than that, I mean, I don't really think there's too much here to take away from this game other than Cedric Wilson, who his first two catches of the season were 40-yard bombs for touchdowns, ended the day with 5 receptions, 170 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So who is Cedric Wilson, and do we care?
I messaged Mark Salazar. He's our resident Cowboys expert. If I cared who he was, and he said no. So he said it just looked like they found something in the Seahawks secondary and were exploiting it. So he's not going to jump Gallup or Cooper or Lamb. So I it was just one of those big games. I doubt there's much going forward there. But yeah, this was just what we hoped for. Just huge fireworks both sides of the ball. If DK Metcalf didn't celebrate early going into the end zone, you can add another touchdown to him and Russell Wilson. So I feel pretty good. I had Dak and Russell Wilson, I forget which order, but 2 and 3 in my quarterback rankings this week, and they both went just absolutely nuts. So start anyone you can against the Cowboys and Seahawks right now.
Yeah, I'm going to say that I'm glad, and I'm going to thank Seattle on behalf of the NFL for finally letting Russell Wilson just run wild, because I think we've all wanted to see this for a long time. And I don't like to be too hyperbolic, but man, he's looking like, if he can keep this up for a bit, that he could be go down as one of the best quarterbacks of all time, because it's just amazing the things he's doing and those deep balls. And as Eric said, like, he had another touchdown that he threw, and it just doesn't, it's not on there because Metcalf kind of coughed it up. But yeah, he looks amazing. He's so much fun to watch.
Yep. That's high praise for someone who's never received an MVP vote. And I know that because that's like every fun fact trivia thing for, you know, every football fan knows. But let me tell you, Seahawks are 3-0. Russell Wilson's having an absolutely incredible start to the season. I think finally Russell Wilson might be able to get himself one like third place MVP vote, I think, by the end of the year. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good bet here. He's running away with it at this point, I would say. So I guess the only person who was disappointing was Zeke. I mean, he still gets you a touchdown, but you would hope for more than what? 58 yards on 14 carries and 12 targets. But I mean, they're using Zeke, so you're not going to complain. Dalton Schultz, you know, I think he's on the streaming radar, 4 for 48 receiving. And Lamb and Cooper, they'll have better weeks. Gallup had a big week. He did catch kind of a bobbled weird play that got a big chunk of yards. But yeah, I love all these receivers in Dallas.
All right, fantastic. So moving forward, you are still firing up all Seahawks and all Cowboys. Let's head to Los Angeles, where the Carolina Panthers surprised everyone. I think everyone had kind of really written them off for this game and beat the Chargers 21-16. Hey, the Panthers are now undefeated in the post Christian McCaffrey era. So, I mean, you know, do we really even need that guy? We're good with Mike Davis, right? But in all seriousness, we talked at length about the Chargers passing game and what Herbert under center means for everyone. So let's just head to the Carolina side of the ball. DJ Moore, only 4 targets today. Did have 65 yards, but you know, are you concerned about Moore's volume, Mike?
Yeah, it's definitely a bit worrisome to see what he's done so far this year. Feels like he hasn't put up a great performance yet. I don't have the box scores in front of me, but I feel like he's generally been underwhelming. I don't know if he scored a touchdown even. That being said, it felt like everything was a little depressed in the passing game this week. Yeah. And I'll repeat that I don't really trust Teddy Bridgewater to lead this offense very much. I don't think he's going to add much. He's definitely better than Kyle Allen was last year, but that's not saying too much. And yeah, you look across the board, 65 for Moore, 55 for Anderson, 45 for Davis and Samuel. Nobody really managed anything. It hurts to see Moore not putting up more. Ha, that was a nice one. Yeah, good when I laugh at my own jokes. But yeah, I think it's just the state of this offense, and McCaffrey was the engine, and the engine's gone, so now it's just kind of puttering along.
Yeah, and I watched a lot of this one. I mean, it was just So the Chargers outgained the Panthers by 134 yards, ran 23 more plays, but the Panthers won the turnover differential by 4. So they just had a lot of short fields. Chargers were turning the ball over. They had a lead. They were just asking Bridgewater to be a game manager. He played pretty well, but just nothing explosive. I don't know. I think DJ Moore will be fine. They just didn't need to throw a lot. He had a tough matchup against Chris Harris Jr. Robbie Anderson was actually really encouraging. I mean, he had 5 on 6 targets for 55 yards, and he wasn't relying on the deep passes. He was catching some crossers. So I think Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore are both in really good shape going forward. Moore will have better days. And Curtis Samuel, unfortunately, they're just using so close to the line of scrimmage. They gave him some carries and just some really short passes, and there's just not much there. So I think Moore and Anderson have really jumped ahead in this pack. And if someone wanted to sell low on DJ Moore, I would definitely take him. When the Panthers fall behind, he's going to have better days.
Yeah, definitely. We're all expecting pretty much the exact opposite game script this week. Yep. We definitely thought the Chargers would be in the lead for most of the game, and it'd be, you know, Joshua Kelly, you know, high volume game as they're, you know, playing kill the clock, and Carolina coming, you know, trying to pass from behind. So definitely flipped the script on all of us this week.
Yeah, and Mike Davis, he got 77% of the snaps, led the team in targets. So if you got him, I think you can pretty much start him every week because he's looking like an excellent fill-in, and Bridgewater loves dumping it off to him. You can tell already.
All right, and then before we move on to the next game, just if you did, you know, click on this timestamp looking to hear our thoughts on the Chargers game, head back to the beginning of the show. We talk about it a lot in the takeaway section. So, you know, we're going to move on to Arizona, where the Detroit Lions beat the Cardinals 26-23. Definitely surprising as Detroit came in the game 0-2. Not looking like a very good, you know, team this year. And then the Cardinals were, you know, looking fantastic to start the year. But, you know, Kenny Golladay is back, little baby Tron. And he did really well in his first game back, 6 for 57 and a touchdown. So definitely good, good sights there. Now, what that means, though, for Marvin Jones, because a lot of us thought, you know, hey, he might perform better with more defensive attention on Kenny Golladay, but he only had 3 targets. So, you know, Golladay, Jones, what's their outlook moving forward, Eric?
Golladay is the clear number one. I mean, I know that Jones will have these weeks every once in a while, but I'm not real interested. I think Hockenson's passing him up in the pecking order here. So the Lions, they gave 22 carries for 75 yards to Peterson. We talk a lot about the backfield earlier on. Check that out. But yeah, it's Golladay and Hockenson for me. I think that's about it in this passing game.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to agree. Golladay is the clear one for me. That's how he entered the season. And once, you know, he's fully back healthy, that's where he'll resume. Hockenson's a great tight end play. I think we'll see at some point a hot streak from him where, you know, he scores a touchdown in a few straight games and everyone will be saying, oh my God, Hockenson's going to be the new Gronk. And then he'll go quiet for a game or two. But yeah, he looks like he's developing on track, and he's the prospect we thought he was. Jones is an interesting flex. As Eric said, he'll have some 3-touchdown game at some point because that's Marvin Jones, but good luck picking which one. And you know, if you happen to guess it, that's great. But yeah, he's a distant third behind the other two.
Yeah. And we had some false alarms on Hockenson. Jesse James had 3 for 28 and a touchdown. I thought for sure that was Hockenson catching the touchdown. So I think Hockenson will get more of them than James does.
All right, and then with Arizona, I just want to point this out. This is absolutely incredible. DeAndre Hopkins right now is on pace for 170 receptions and 1,900 yards receiving. That is absolutely insane. His worst game so far this year was still good for 20.8 fantasy points. So not really a whole lot in the way of fantasy analysis there, because everyone, you know, Hopkins is drafted everywhere. But if you drafted Hopkins, you probably got him in the second round. You probably got him as maybe like the 5th or 6th wide receiver off the board. And you've got to be feeling pretty good about life right now. But with Arizona, there were some, you know, kind of worrying signs today. Are we starting to see some of the flaws in Kyler Murray's game? He threw for 3 interceptions, did have a touchdown on the ground, did have 2 touchdowns through the air, but you know, is Kyler Murray, are they starting to figure him out a little bit? You know, are we at all concerned for him moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're one of those teams you're going to see the highlights. You're going to see Murray completely juking someone at the goal line, running in for a touchdown. You're going to see Hopkins with monster games. You're going to think that they're just humming along. But I agree, there's some warning signs in here. I mean, most of Murray's interceptions were just kind of him just winging the ball. I don't think it's necessarily Murray as much as this offense just isn't functioning super well outside of Hopkins. I'm actually kind of surprised that Drake had 73 yards rushing on 18 carries. He hasn't really done much at all on the ground. He's not contributing in the passing game. I'm worried, as someone who drafted a lot of Drake, he just hasn't looked explosive. I think it's the blocking, but he's not looking great. Andy Isabella, he makes a nice step here, catches 2 touchdowns, 4 targets, 4 catches. So they're probably going to need to get him more involved, because there's just, it's Hopkins and Murray making plays with his legs, but there's just nothing else going on here. And this team should have put up a lot more than 23 on the Lions. They should have run a lot better. And they've got some things to figure out here for sure.
Yeah, I think I was expecting coming into this season for this to be a 2 or 3-headed monster in the receiving corps. I thought Christian Kirk was going to be a weekly factor. Hopkins, of course, because we all know what he is as a talent. And then you'd see somebody like Andy Isabella or Larry Fitzgerald week to week, or Kenyon Drake, you know, week to week, become that third spot. And it's really more of a one-man show. It's as we said, Hopkins just running away with everything. And if he wasn't here, I don't want to think about what this offense would look like. It would probably be pretty bad. I'm not too worried about Murray. Yeah, this was an ugly game. Anytime you're seeing, you know, multiple picks, that's a bad sign. But he's young. I think people kind of wanted to elevate him a little too quickly into the Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes tier. And he's going to make some mistakes. Now, that being said, when you run 29 yards and a touchdown, that kind of smooths a little bit of the pain.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a young guy, and he's going to pick it up as he goes.
All right, and then, you know, Eric, you mentioned Kenyon Drake not looking too great, so I'm assuming he's going to start slipping down your rankings a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it almost looks like David Johnson when he was running last year, so I'm hoping everything's good with Drake and this offensive line can make some more room, because it's not explosive at all on the ground. The one positive is that Chase Edmonds isn't exactly taking over. He's getting a little more passing game work, but only 3 carries. So he's got a chance to figure this out, but the Lions should have been the get right matchup. They have a bad run defense. So a little bit worrisome here, and he's not getting the touchdowns with Murray running them in.
All right. So let's head to Denver, where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers moved to 2-1. As they beat the Broncos 28-10, Broncos are now 0-3, and things are looking very not good in Denver. Brett Ripien replaced Jeff Driskel for the final drive, so that's another quarterback who got a shot today. You know, do we expect this to be a permanent change? And does that? I don't care. Who cares? This Denver offense is so bad. It's so bad.
Yeah,
I don't think it matters if Ripien or Driskel are under center. Does it make any difference for you, Eric?
Probably not. I mean, this is a tough Tampa Bay defense, I'm pretty sure. So, but no, I think this is going to be ugly with no Sutton. And yeah, it's disappointing. Melvin Gordon will have some volume games, and Fant's still startable. He got 10 targets, but Judy's still figuring things out. This is just an offense to be down on overall.
Mike, do you want to start anyone on Denver?
So what I'll say is, I think Denver should be the brave team that sits like Jerry Judy and Noah Fant and Melvin Gordon, and just says they're all hurt, and just be obvious and go for that quarterback. Because if you could put like Trevor Lawrence with all these guys around him, I'd be excited to watch that week to week. That'd be a really cool team. It's kind of the same thing I thought with Carolina. Like, if you put Trevor Lawrence amongst all those players, wow, that would be fun. But as long as it's Jeff Driskel or Brett Ripien or whoever they pull off the street, Drew Lock, it's not too exciting for me. I mean, Locke was the most interesting of the three for sure, but unfortunately he's out right now, and they're 0-3, and they're in a strong division, which is not going to let them catch up from an 0-3 hole.
Yeah, you mentioned the Tampa Bay defense, Eric, and they've been really, really strong to start the year. They really shut down Melvin Gordon today. Only 26-yard rushing. He only got 8 carries. You know, is this just the passing game is just going to be so bad that Gordon's really not going to have any room to run? Or was it also the Tampa Bay defense is just that good, and, you know, maybe there's better days ahead for Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, they are excellent against the run. This is second straight, maybe even third straight year. So this was an awful matchup for them. But I mean, you've also got the defense. They've got a lot of injuries. They're not quite the same level they used to be. So yeah, bad offense. Defense has taken a step back. Really tough running game matchup. You know, the Tampa Bay had the ball a lot more than them in this game. It's just everything combined here. So Gordon will have better days. But if you were hoping for RB1 kind of back end numbers, that's not coming anytime soon unless Locke comes back quickly.
I think the most interesting thing that happened in Denver today was all the South Park characters being in the stands. So, you know, cool things in Denver, just not on the field.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Tampa Bay backfield because it's still a mess. And we all thought Leonard Fournette, you know, really showed out last week and was going to be given the chance. And Ronald Jones almost doubles him in carries. Jones, 13 for 53. Fournette, 7 for 15. I say this every week. Someone make sense of this backfield, please.
I don't have much. I mean, we're still waiting on the final snap counts, but Jones had 47% of the first half snaps. They've at least scaled back LeSean McCoy a little bit, but I think they're just looking for the hot hand right now. That would be my guess, and nobody's really broken out. I don't know if you have anything, Mike, but I think they're just waiting for someone to separate here.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I think they're waiting for someone to take the lead. And I think if as soon as Jones or Fournette puts down a monster performance, they'd be happy to say, all right, you're the guy. We settled it. There we go. I have to wonder a little bit if maybe it's kind of an injury thing, looking at the Mike Evans injury and the Chris Godwin injury. Maybe they just want to get to the postseason healthy. And yeah, it's maybe a little early for that, but that division's not looking great, and I think it's safe to say that they'll probably wind up with a postseason spot, assuming they stay on this course. But yeah, it's hard to trust any running back here.
Yeah, that is true, though. They haven't had this offense at full speed at all, so maybe things open up when Godwin, if he's okay, if him and Evans are going full speed.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of chatter on our Discord this week about, you know, should I be trading Leonard Fournette after the week that he just had, and you know, hopefully you did. Because it's clear, you know, a lot of people thought, hey, that was the, you know, Fournette showed that he's the guy here in the backfield. Tampa Bay is going to give him the opportunities, and he's clearly the best running back. And, you know, I hope you sold high because none of that stuff looked true today. And the most concerning, at least for me, you know, it's not so much about what they did with the volume. It's that, you know, Fournette was a clear number two to Ronald Jones, meaning to me that it's not going to be clear week to week which running back you can trust. So if you have Jones and you're thinking about sending a message and saying, hey, should I sell high on sell high on any Tampa Bay running back you can. Don't have them on your roster. Let them be someone else's problem. This was probably the best passing game of the season so far for Tom Brady and this Tampa Bay offense. You know, classic Mike Evans game because he scores two touchdowns. Wait, that's 2 yards also. What? Mike Evans, 2 yards and two touchdowns? Like, what is happening in Tampa Bay? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's a worry because we love that downfield threat that Evans is, and it's not happening. But, I mean, on the plus side, you know, Brady's the type that can lock on to someone in the red zone and feed him a bunch of touchdowns. So at least Evans is buying you some time until maybe they get on the same page. But apparently Gronk is a thing again. He got 7 targets, 6 catches. So, Mike, I think you had a few things to say on this offense. I'm still waiting to see how this all shakes out, but you got any insights here?
Yeah, so obviously full steam ahead with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans while they're healthy. The Evans thing would be a lot more worrisome if it wasn't with a seasoned quarterback like Tom Brady. As Eric said, I like that he's building that red zone repertoire, that we see Brady trusts him enough to go back to him twice in an area which would usually be Gronk dominated. You would think on a day when Gronk's getting 7 targets that he would be the one with the 2 touchdowns. So to see Evans still be the guy is pretty good. That being said, without those 2 touchdowns, it's 2 catches for 2 yards, and we're all saying, should we abandon ship? Are we terrified? Is Evans toast? It's definitely tough. As far as the tight ends, I mean, both of those tight ends were usable this week. I mean, if you're in PPR, 7.9 for O.J. Howard, 10.8 for Gronk, neither of those is bad. It would be nice to see this kind of melt into one person like O.J. Gronk. if I could start him in my leagues, yeah, he'd probably be one of the best tight ends available. So wide receivers, still Godwin, still Evans. I personally am not going to trust Scotty Miller or anyone who's starting behind them. I don't think there's quite enough volume for that. Miller did put up a good game, 5 targets, 3 receptions, 83 yards. And then the running backs, yeah, still no faith in them.
So you mentioned, you know, without the touchdowns, people are going to be saying, hey, is Mike Evans someone we should abandon ship on? So I got to say, is Mike Evans someone we should be abandoning ship on? I know we mentioned the red zone usage and Brady and Evans kind of developing a rapport there. But, you know, if that's not going to be, you know, if we're not getting the volume elsewhere, I mean, should we be trying to sell on Mike Evans?
I'm going to say no. I feel safe because we've seen before he puts up the occasional stinker. And you kind of know that with some big boom games come a couple bust games. And we've kind of just learned to live with that because the yearly numbers are always there. And if his bust game is still going to have two touchdowns, well then, I mean, I kind of avoided a bad day with him.
Yeah. And I really think that we just need them all out there healthy, full speed. Let's get this thing operating how they envisioned it preseason. And then let's make some real hard judgments here.
All right. So let's move to the final game of the day. Well, we still have Sunday Night Football, but, you know, we started recording this before that game finished. So let's head to Indianapolis, where New York, just as a city, took a big fat loss today. They were outscored, by the way, in the two games combined, 72-16. So not a good day if you're a New York football fan. I mean, I guess, you know, you're usually not a fan of both teams. So I guess you can at least take some solace in knowing the other team also got smacked around today. So I guess that makes you feel a little bit better. But hey, if you're a New York Jets fan, you know, good things. Darnold actually threw two consecutive touchdowns to open this game. Just, you know, one of them was to the other team. So actually, maybe if you're a Darnold believer, not so good. But I got to ask, in a game like this, you know, 36-7 and Indianapolis was completely in control the entire game. Are there any worthwhile takeaways?
Not a ton. I mean, it was good to see Nyheim Hines back involved in a blowout like this. He had four catches for 40 yards on five targets, seven carries. He was in the red zone a couple times. So I think we know that week one wasn't what to expect from him, but last week it's not going to be that bad either. So if you hung on to him, I think Hines is going to have some flex value from week to week. But no, I mean, they didn't need to use the passing game much. I guess Mo Alley Cox, 3 for 50 on three targets and a touchdown. They probably need to get him more work because he's been super efficient with it.
I'm going to jump in and say I unfortunately pulled a muscle patting myself on the back because I had the Colts as my defensive stream of the week, and not like 2 minutes into the day, I saw someone blasting out that they had a pick six, and I was like, oh, that's nice. Even if the rest of the game goes horribly, I still did okay with that call. And as you said, even though we overestimated how high they finished, the Colts were a monster defense. So we can stream defenses against the Jets if anybody wasn't thinking that was true.
Yeah, and I'm still high on Jonathan Taylor. We talked a lot about him early on. I believe that was one of Mike's losers for the week. Was that right? Yeah, so you can hear more about it there. I'm still happy to have him, and if someone was a little worried about this, I would trade for him. I think there's going to be better weeks. I still see some big touchdown runs coming from Taylor, so I'm still pretty high on him.
I would agree. Even though he was a loser for me, I still believe in the talent. I still believe in him moving forward. That's not a statement of what's to come. It's just, it was a rough week to have him and think you were going to get more.
Yeah.
And then any interest in Braxton Berrios? He scored a touchdown in both this week and last week, you know, a total of six. Accumulating properly. It's a total of 10 receptions for the year, over 100 yards receiving and two touchdowns. So, you know, I know we joke about this Jets offense, but, you know, Berrios looks like he's getting some work. Should we be looking at him at all?
I was just looking at their targets. Most targets, well, tied for most, was Kalen Ballage. And there's someone with four targets named Lawrence Cager. I don't know. Have you guys ever heard of Lawrence Cager?
Nope.
No. Okay. No, I'm not very interested in Berrios. Sorry, Jets fans. We probably shouldn't make fun of him anymore. But no. I think eventually people are going to get healthy, and then it'll just be a jumbled mess.
Yeah, Berrios is more likely to be a cereal that I eat than it is to be a receiver that I start.
it's a fantastic way to end the Jet segment. And then Sunday Night Football did just end. Packers win 37-30 over the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans. Green Bay is really looking like, I think, the best offense in the NFC. Might even be, the Seattle Seahawks are a thing too. So let's throw this out there right now. Packers or Seahawks, who has a better offense? Eric, who do you think?
I like the Seahawks. They are cooking. But let's throw it to you, Miles, here. Do you see the leading receiver on the Packers this week with Devontae Adams out?
Of course I see the leading receiver on the Packers. I was waiting. I was going to let this one, you know, simmer a little bit, but we'll get right into it. Alan Lazard, six for 146 and a touchdown on team leading 8 targets. I cannot wait to watch the footage and see exactly how he was used. But, you know, Rodgers, you know, really kind of developed a bit of a rapport with Lazard last year. And I was kind of looking to see, you know, if he'd be able to keep that up this year. And without Davante Adams out there, you know, he had to throw it to someone, and Lazard was his favorite target. So, I'm going to go ahead and just recast from a couple weeks ago when I said Lazard is the man in Green Bay.
Yeah, we admittedly didn't get to watch a ton of this one as we're recording, but I do wonder if Marquez Valdez-Scantling maybe got shut down by Lattimore. Maybe that was a part of it, but he did nothing. One catch for 5 yards on 4 targets. So Lazard definitely takes a big jump forward here in the passing game.
Mike, are you taking the Seahawks offense as well, or do you think the Packers have the best offense in the NFC?
I've got the Seahawks offense as well. But I will say that this is the Aaron Rodgers revenge tour continuing. Yeah. Just in case you needed to be reminded, they took a quarterback in the draft who a lot of people didn't even like. And Aaron Rodgers might have taken that personally. It's immensely impressive to see Rodgers do this without Davante Adams. Because I still think nobody else on that receiving core, except for maybe Lazard a little bit, is super impressive. I think it's a lot of people who are just a guy. And I think we all knew this coming into the season. Everybody was saying, oh, the Packers will take a receiver in the first. Oh, they didn't. Oh, they're going to move up and take one. Oh, they didn't. They're going to take one in the second for sure.
The third. Oh, they're going to sign one. Yeah.
They're going to sign for one. They wouldn't be crazy enough to not go in with another receiver. And then they did it. And Aaron Rodgers still takes what he has. I won't say what I would call it. but turns it into 283 and 3 touchdowns. And it's just, he's, in case you were wondering, he's not washed up and he still will torture my Bears 2 times a year.
Yeah. I think for me, you know, again, I didn't see this game, so I'm really interested in reading the What We Saw article on this game, especially because I think there's a lot of interesting things here. Latavius Murray leads the team in carries with 12, doubling Alvin Kamara's carries. But Kamara leading the way with 13 receptions. And then Emmanuel Sanders, you know, a lot of people were worried about him after week 2, wondering if Breeze and Sanders were ever going to be able to get on the same page. And, 4 receptions, 56 yards. That's something, and a touchdown to boot. So a lot really to dig in here on both sides. So definitely look for that in the What We Saw article, which, as I said at the top of the show, comes out Monday morning. They go really in-depth onto each game. And then check back in tomorrow night for the Waiver Wire podcast. That's led by Frank Costanzo and Ryan Heath. Definitely, you know, want to see who the top pickups of the week are. There's a lot that changed this week. So definitely check that out. And Eric, any last thoughts?
No, I was just going to say, I think Kamara is probably the RB1 right now with the top out. So he'll be 1 or 2 for me most weeks, especially with Thomas out. He's just getting fed.
Mike, how you feeling going into week 4? Nick Foles, a quarterback, and a 3-0 record.
Well, we got the Colts in week 4, and they've been decent, but they haven't super impressed, and we're at home. So I'm feeling pretty good about 4-0. I kind of hope for 0-4, so we might get Trevor this year. But I'll take 4-0 if we get it.
Hey, as the guy who writes the streaming defense article and you're taking your victory lap on the Colts, are you going to put the Colts as your streamer of the week again against your Bears?
No, I can't be that bold. I gotta see who the Jets and the Giants are playing. That's a little hint.
All right, guys. Thanks for staying with us. That was Eric Smith and Mike Nicholas. I'm Miles Nelson, and good night, everyone.